Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The Call is brought to you by CMC Markets, a world-leading online trading platform for CFDs and shares around the globe.
G'day and welcome to The Call, 10 stocks picked by you, two experts, 1 hour. It is Wednesday, the 5th of October. I'm Andrew Gagan. Great to have you with us. And our two experts on the show today, Andrew Weiland from DP Wealth Advisory and Mark Gardner from Macro Capital. Welcome to both of you. Mark, I'm going to let you catch your breath. You're literally running. It's that sort of market at the moment, isn't it?
It is a little bit, yeah.
Andrew, let me ask you first. Look, a really impressive rally. Not often that the RBA rocks the world in terms of its moves. Is it a sucker's rally?
Yeah, two swallows a summer does not make, Andrew. So as in yesterday and today. So look, it's great. I'm certainly happy to see a bit of a relief rally. One might argue it's a short covering rally because, as you intimated, the RBA, everyone had good money on the RBA going 50, only went 25. And you certainly, I think all eyes really need to be on the US Fed and what they're up to, US dollar strength, etc. So I welcome the rally, sort of clawing back some of that 7% loss that we suffered in September. But as we know, September and October can be tricky. So we are just actively watching at the moment.
All right, actively watching. Mark, what are your thoughts on what we're seeing over the last couple of sessions?
Yeah, look, frighteningly similar to the sort of June, July lows as well in terms of the pattern, the gap up in the VIX. And then, you know, the amount of times I've seen over the last sort of 20 plus years where a rumour comes out, like the Credit Suisse one on the Monday, and when the market's at lows and, you know, there's a small capitulation and then a bounce out is, you know, fairly countless really. So sort of getting out the last of the, you know, the week longs, I suppose. But then pretty surprised about this rally, particularly that, you know, even pundits from the US are saying it's RBA driven. But I think it's more what the RBA going by 25 yesterday sort of really presents a more reasonable case that, you know, if central banks have an opportunity to pause, they would probably prefer to because they don't want to be just driving the economy back down into the dirt after all the stimulus and the pandemic and things like that. So taking a breather is probably their preference if they can. So, but yeah, look, this sort of spike rally and the pace of it in a bear market probably concerns me more than anything. If this had happened over a week or a week and a half, I'd be more confident, but certainly not over a 2 day period. So, but look, we were just basically finishing off, you know, at reallocating anyway. So we're happy to see the rally. Don't get me wrong, but you know, I'm still pretty cautious overall. So
yeah, it's the hallmark of that volatility that remains at the moment. All right, our stocks we're going to be looking at in the first half of the show: BHP, Ansell, Sayona Mining, Computershare, and the iShares Consumer Staples ETF, IXI. Now, our stock of the day, not out of any particular news that we're seeing, but it is one of the best performers today, James Hardie, stock up around 8%, in fact. It is the global materials and manufacturer, being one of the best performers. And Andrew, I might start with you then, what you're seeing with James Hardie, and I guess in that building materials sector, given the slowdown we're seeing in property, of course, and how that's likely to affect it. But then, I mean, do we stop renovating in these times of when the economy starts to falter?
Yeah, we've discussed before, Andrew. I think I tried to pick on you about being a renovator and you corrected me, so I won't make that mistake again. But look, I'm a bit cautious on James Hardie. I mean, again, as we can see, that price action there, that's pretty spectacular today. 76% of their revenue comes from the US. And to Mark's point, really what's going on in the US at the moment, we've got a fair bit of noise because we have US midterm elections coming up pretty soon. And after all the contention of 2020, how's that all going to play out from a political perspective? So, and we've seen prior to today, their share price down 34% for the year relative to the share our market, which is only down about 4%. So it's been a pretty strong underperformer. If you look though at the underlying numbers, like they've got a very strong return on equity. You might remember, Andrew, that's one of the things I like to look at. Strong ROE at about 52% ROE, 17% margin, which is pretty good. And it's trading well below consensus. Consensus about $43. But then we sort of turn our mind to the PE, which is 13 times. So, it's not eye-watering. I think the market's around 16 times at the moment. But you've only got forecast EPS growth of about 4%. So our friend, the PEG ratio, where we're trying to buy companies whose earnings per share growth is greater than that PE ratio, it certainly fails that measure. So on balance, 76% US, you've got sort of all that sort of US exposure, as I just spoke about before, PE versus EPS. I think it's a hold. I probably wouldn't be selling into this rally given the big divergence between consensus and the share price, but I can certainly see plenty of headwinds in the short term. So it is a hold.
All right, yeah, Marcus, we can see that the share price essentially regaining back to essentially, I guess, where it was early September. So just recovering some of those losses. So I guess we should bear that in mind given what we're seeing today. How are you looking at James Hardie?
Yeah, I'd agree with Andrew. It's a hold for now. I think that US exposure, obviously, it's probably the most likely with the Fed going fairly aggressively to have a recession, based on the twos tens being a very reliable forward indicator in the US, nearing the sort of minus 50 mark, which I think is about a 20 or 30 year low. So look, I think it's, I mean, it's already sold off about 40 odd percent this year. They do have great return on equity. They would have some fixed costs. They would have been hurt by inflation with some fixed cost stuff, obviously, that's going to market now, on a bit of a lag. So there is a risk that their next reporting, maybe their margin, maybe hit a little bit. But look, I'd be watching the economic numbers into the end of the year. And look, the more likely we are towards a soft landing, I think the more inclined you'd be to accumulate on this one because it's a high quality company. But I think you really need more data to commit to this one at the moment. I think there's more than enough solid, safer options out there that'll yield about the same that you can probably pick up at the moment and not have to not have to worry about it.
Yep. All right. James Hardie, that's a double hold. All right, let's get into the stocks as picked by you. The first one is the biggest of them all, BHP. It is the diversified miner, and Mark, just looking today, it's up just under 1%. And of course, I guess we've got to focus on what commodity prices are doing at the moment in the face of central banks raising rates, and we have seen obviously a downturn in the global economy.
Yeah, look, I mean, China's already there though, and that's their major customer. So, and we're probably expecting, there's already been a trickle feed of very targeted stimulus from the PBOC. So, if China starts to turn around, I think, I think, and as well, steel demand for switching in, the renewables transition, etc. Obviously, that project for the potash, even though it was at a $5.7 billion cost. Over there in Canada, I think they're going to get, at current prices for that potash, first year, they're pulling back, nearly $5 billion in revenue. So, it's the sort of scale project that really only BHP can do. The management's really smoothed out. There's been a couple of, great management stories, BHP obviously being one of them, but Elders is another one where management's actually been very proactive over the last decade trying to smooth out the earnings from boom and bust. BHP's obviously going in the right direction on a long-term bet going into, fertiliser. So, with that potash project. So, Overall, it's a staple of our portfolios. We've been topping up over the last couple of weeks. We're probably slightly overweight. Be fairly happy to buy it here overall, and I don't really see the dividends pulling back dramatically over the next 12 months. So if there's market volatility, well, look, you can cry into your dividends with your with your franking credits, etc. So very happy to hold it. Very happy to buy it here as well.
Yep. Okay. Yeah, Andrew. Obviously, pretty hard to avoid if you're holding, a stake in the index there. So, how are you viewing? Is it a buying opportunity as far as you're concerned?
Yeah, it is, Andrew. And frankly, if this goes bust, then Mark and I don't have a job, and sorry, neither do you.
Yeah.
So, it's pretty solid. And I like it for all the reasons that just Mark just spoke about, that decarbonisation thematic, that electrification thematic. It's more ESG friendly by virtue of that Woodside demerger, or demerging its petroleum assets to Woodside. So PE of 8, 7% fully franked dividend, trading near consensus, but I agree. There's only a couple of direct shares held in the famous Sarand, Andrew and Sarah Super Fund, and this is one of them. So it is.
Okay, there you go. That is a double buy for BHP. All right, on to our second stock. It is Ansell. Max wanting to know about this, asking, have the good days come and gone? I own a small parcel. Should I sell? Of course, it's one of the world's largest manufacturers of safety gloves. Sort of came into its own, I guess, during the height of the pandemic, given its personal protective equipment. But we have since seen its revenue has fallen since then, I guess, as those COVID-related demands have come off. So, Andrew, can you answer that question as to whether you should sell now?
I don't think it's a sell, but it's certainly not a buy. So I guess that means it's a
I
hold.
guess so, yeah.
I guess it's a hold. But look, again, there's lots to like about this business. But I looked back at my notes the last time we covered this, which was from memory about 12 months ago. And the first thing that stood out to me was that the margin was 12% then. We're now back to 8%. So that speaks to inflation, it speaks to supply chain. It speaks to manufacturing costs, etc. And I think that's why, as you can see, share price down around 20, 21% for the year. If I go then to 5 years, it's actually up 5% per annum over the last 5 years relative to the, and again, all these numbers I'm using, Australian share market, the Aussie share market's up about 7.5%. So, from that point of view, it's okay. Consensus is about $28. Where are we at the moment? About 26.50 odd. P/E of 13 versus EPS growth of 9, so again fails that PEG ratio test, and that falling margin and a 10% return on equity. I mean, that's okay, but your gold standard that you're looking for is around that 15 plus. So it's okay, but I'm not sort of overwhelmed with excitement, with enthusiasm. So it's a hold.
Okay, Mark Ansell.
Yeah, for all the reasons Andrew just said, it's a sell for me, really.
Right.
Over a 5 year basis, it's underperformed the index. And at the moment where we are, we've sort of fallen off a rather large cliff this year, and we're in bear market territory. Whilst this might be relatively safe, it's not, it's certainly not going to rocket out of these lows either, towards the, when we get back to another bull market run, whenever that is. So, I don't really see any point holding this one, and that margin compression as well. They sort of bungled a little bit of inventory over the course of the pandemic, which I mean was probably it was a tough period, but you want to have all hands on deck and manage your inventory perfectly when you're when you've got a company opportunity of a lifetime basically with the pandemic. So I'd be selling this and looking elsewhere. I mean even. I'm not much of a fan of just a simple index ETF, but if on a 5 year basis this thing's returning 2% less per year, you're probably better off in something else, I think, that's a little bit more diversification. So just nothing particularly excites me. It's around about analyst consensus, and there's a good 200 stocks that'll bounce harder if we turn around, and that seems to be falling with the market. So So yeah, no, it's just a sell for better opportunities for me. Yep.
Okay, all right, so better opportunities. Let's see if those opportunities lie back in the resources sector, because we're heading back there. Sayona Mining, Jamie wanted to know about this. It is in the lithium space. So we know that's been on fire recently. It's come off today along with many other lithium companies, despite the rally again we're seeing today. Recently had a pre-feasibility study launched into production of lithium carbonate at the North American lithium operation. There are plenty of those out there at the moment, Mark. So how does Sayona Mining fit into your reasoning?
Yeah, I like this one. It's location, obviously being in, it's the largest spodumene in North America resource. There, 2023, they'll be in production, or they say 23-24, but obviously the sooner the better, as we've seen with the likes of Alkem and PLS that are now producing, they're taking advantage of those prices. So I'm sure that there'll be every effort to get that mine up and running. The CapEx isn't very onerous for this. It's called a brownfield mine. So, you know, it's not deep, hard rock. So there shouldn't be too much, you know, the risk of a budgetary blowout shouldn't be very high. This one and Core Lithium, essentially, are probably the two next in line. I like the geographical location, obviously being in Canada as well. Obviously that reduces transport costs, etc. So yeah, look, this is one that you probably, I mean, yesterday I think was trading around about 22, 23 cents. This morning got up to 28 cents. I think it was down by the time I left the office. So, you know, it's certainly one that if you've got a low threshold of pain, I wouldn't be playing in this space. But it's, you know, it's certainly, you know, this or Core Lithium, if you can buy on a dip, probably not up here at 30 at the moment, but yesterday, probably a different matter. I think they rallied, those lithium stocks rallied about 10 to 15% yesterday. Yeah. So they're just sort of having a bit of a breather, but you can see from it's been up to about 38 cents, I think, like at the start of last month or middle of last month. So it does move around, but yeah, if you can pick some up around the 20s, I think it's very good. Look, right here today, it's a speculative buy, but you know, it will move around. You'll have to have a fairly large, fairly wide stop and take profit on it. So I wouldn't be allocating huge amounts of cash to it.
Okay, Andrew, a specky buy. What are your thoughts?
Well, it's a Queensland company, so I think that itself speaks for itself. I don't probably need to cover up much more than what Mark said, because he's covered it really well. Look, I don't mind it, and for all the reasons that Mark has covered off, the location, about to start production, Piedmont is one of the major shareholders, but paying these sort of prices where everyone's feeling a little bit more excitable, you want to be buying this on a day of pain, a week of pain. Not where everyone's euphoric. So from my point of view, it's a hold. Again, I agree, probably in that sort of low 20s is probably a better risk-adjusted return. And of course, it wouldn't be the call without a gratuitous ETF call out, and that of course would be ACDC, which gives you exposure to a wide range of companies in that whole battery space, including miners. And that to me is probably a better way to play that. You've got those sort of 30 names that you're getting exposure to, rather than trying to work out whether Pilbara is better than Core Lithium versus all the others. And I'm not casting aspersions on any of them. They've all got their pluses and minuses, but Andrew, the boring buy basket, more better risk-adjusted return. So it's a hold.
Okay. All right, let's move ahead to Computershare. Simon Monington about this. It's been up around, 30% over the past year, in fact. I guess the potential, given its business model, that it can collect cash from businesses before then handing it out to investors. So perhaps standing to benefit in a high interest rate environment. Andrew, Computershare, what are your thoughts?
Don't mind it, but it is pretty, not fully priced, but it's certainly well on the way. And again, it's another one of these businesses where ROE is okay, 13%, margin 10%, okay. But And even if you look at the PE, the PE is around 17 times relative to the market, which is 16 times. So again, really good business. As you spoke about before, you know, $102 billion in dividends paid in Australia the last 12 months. And, you know, Computershare would have their hands on a fair bit of that for the short term. But the price action has been pretty aggressive. Probably the one thing that would save it for me is that the forecast EPS growth over the next 12 months is 19%. So again, it actually passes that peg test, PE of 17, ROE growth of 19. So I think it's a hold simply because I don't think there's enough margin of safety between where the share price is and consensus. But again, a little bit of pain if you could sort of buy it in that 23, even sort of the low 24s. It's probably worth a look at. But at this stage, I think it's a hold, Andrew.
Okay. Mark, do you agree?
Yeah, pretty boring show today. We're agreeing on just about everything. Yeah, it's a little bit high for my likings. You know, it'd be one of those things I probably regret saying it's too high in 3 years or something like that, because it does tend to be, you know, a fairly consistent grinder. But yeah, it's rising interest rates are going to help these guys. But yeah, as Andrew said, well, basically put perfectly, the margin of safety is really not there. I mean, it's completely priced to, you know, for nothing to go wrong. It's just really one of those things that I just don't feel the need to play, you know, at near record highs when the market's getting pretty hammered. It's just not for me. High quality company, consistent earnings, interest rates will benefit it. But it's one of those ones that I think you'll get better returns elsewhere. And you know, like I said, if one or two things go wrong, it's not of the spectacular at these prices. So
it's had its run, because I mean that has been impressive over the past
year.
It's been
really impressive, and you know, credit to them. And but at these prices here, I'd be preferring to buy on a dip. I think it's it's getting towards the point where the risk return's really not in your favour.
What to the point where you perhaps sell it?
I think you could looking at that chart, it's a beautiful one to run a trailing stop on.
Yep.
I think overall, and you know, if rates do normalise a little bit higher and the economy, you know, gets to grips with that again, obviously this thing will just continue to plod on. So I think you can probably set a trailing stop somewhere around that sort of 21 to 20 mark, and then just follow it up as it grinds higher.
Yep.
And take your dividends. So but yeah, it's a hold for me.
Yeah,
I don't think I could be initiating a position up here.
Okay, so it's both a hold on Computershare. All right, let's get into the ETFs, and we're going to go out of order here because Mark, excuse me, but
that's fine.
We'll go to the ETF specialist. We're going to take a look at the consumer staples ETF IXI that holds the likes of Woolies, Coles, Endeavour Group. But also has a basket of companies out of the States, the UK, Switzerland, Japan, France, in fact. Andrew, over to you. What are your thoughts then on IXI, the Consumer Staples ETF?
So if we sort of circle back to how we started the session, the show, the podcast, depending on how you're consuming this content, and you sort of said how you're feeling about the world, and I said, look, we're probably a little bit cautious at the moment. One that we're very comfortable holding in this type of environment is consumer staples. So products that will be consumed. There might be a little bit of movement in the demand, but generally people are going to continue utilising their products. And so that's where this style of ETF really comes to the fore. It's not going to shoot the lights out. It's not going to be sort of a lithium flyer, but equally so, you're not going to be sort of crying into your beer, seeing things down 30, 40% in a year as well. So that's why we quite like this one. As you said, it sort of tracks that S&P Global Consumer Staples Index. It's got names like Procter & Gamble, Nestle, Coca-Cola, Costco, Walmart, Unilever. So all those sort of recognisable consumer staple names. Over the last 10 years, it's returned about 11% per annum. So again, that's certainly nothing to be sort of sneezed at. and the MER, the sort of the cost of them running it from our friends at BlackRock iShares, it's around 0.46. So it's probably sort of middle of the pack. It's not super cheap. We'll come to a super cheap ETF a little bit later in the show. But 46 basis points for what you're getting in the context of that global diversification. And as you said, Andrew, US, UK, Europe, Japan, etc. So to me, this is, pun intended, a staple. A defensive holding in this type of market. It's a buy.
It's a buy. Of course, it's a staple. Wouldn't expect anything else from you, Andrew, a core holding there. So it is a buy. Mark, what are your thoughts then? Because, or would you prefer to go direct, just as far as some of those staples are concerned, particularly locally?
Yeah, we've been buyers of Woolworths, sorry, Endeavour,
Yep.
not Woolworths, Elders and GrainCorp over the last couple of weeks as well. I sort of prefer that direct exposure. Nothing just not to say that there's anything wrong with this. It's a very good way, particularly for smaller accounts, to be able to get diversified, a diversified exposure without sort of having to pay a fortune in brokerage. So it's good from that aspect. This would be the sort of thing that, the earlier you can sort of consider these sort of that staple sector, you've really outperformed the market. Say if you've made a switch out of, the tech stocks into this like at the start of the year. I think if we're it's a good place to hide while the market's very volatile, and while VIX remains above 20, I think it's probably a pretty sensible place to be in that staple sector. But as we start to find some stability and markets get used to higher rates, etc., I would probably be sort of switching out. In my mind, it's kind of a place to hide rather than
Yep.
While still sort of being allocated. And with Elders and Elders Endeavour and GrainCorp at historically low PEs at the moment and yielding quite well, I think it's with some upside growth in them. I'm sort of preferring to be in that space. But
Yep.
look, yeah, it's a yeah happy. You can happily buy this. I think we're somewhere near the bottom. I'm not definitely not calling the bottom, but you're still going to get a really good result out of this and a big margin of safety. So happy to call it a buy, but I would probably prefer the individual names generally.
Yep. Okay. All right. Well, let's summarise where we've been then for the first half of the show. Our stock of the day was James Hardie. Both have a hold on it on the building materials company there. Andrew pointing to it's particularly focused with some 76% of its revenue coming out of the States. Mark saying you'd probably look to accumulate if we're heading towards that or a soft landing. It's not a given, is it? All right, our first stock as picked by you, the big one, BHP. Both have a buy on it. I mean, it's hard, you can't avoid it. Mark looking into a China turnaround there, and Andrew, mentioning that decarbonisation, the electrification of the planet, which where BHP is well placed to take advantage of. Ansell, a hold from Andrew, a sell from Mark, saying it's been underperforming the index over the past 5 years. In the lithium space, Sayona Mining, a speculative buy from Mark, probably prefers core lithium at this point. And Andrew's got a hold on it. Of course, he would go for the ETF, which would be ACDC in the battery metal space. Computershare, a hold from Andrew, a hold also from Mark, but potentially using a trailing stop there, given it's performed so well over the past 12 months. And finally, there, that consumer staples ETF, buy from both. All right, let's have a look at our portfolio because we are tracking our own high conviction fund, which is picked by our investment committee. The latest episode of that is live for you to watch at ausbiz.com. So let's check in on the update. Heading into October, Ardent Leisure, that was removed. Bapcorp was trimmed to be added to Soul Patts. Incitec Pivot was trimmed as well. SEEK was added with its weighting funded by Ardent Leisure and Incitec Pivot. So let's check the performance thus far. It's up 1.6% on a cumulative return basis since its inception at the beginning of March. We've obviously done well over the past couple of days. I don't know that we factored in today's moves, but obviously, given that dramatic move we saw yesterday, has helped. So keep sending in your requests. Keep the call switched on to see which stocks our committee will be looking at next.
At CMC, we've been in the game for a while, and although a lot of things have changed, our mentality hasn't. We aim to give experienced traders the best trading experience, like our expert platform with its second-to-none trading tools. Plus, our pricing is completely transparent. That's why people who've been trading for a long time stay with us for a long time. So if you're serious about trading, switch to the market leader trusted for over 30 years. Trade CFDs your way at cmcmarkets.com. You don't own underlying assets. Consider relevant PDS and TMD or information. Memorandum for CMC Pro accounts at our website.
Well, speaking of next, our next five stocks, we'll be looking at PWR Holdings, Dexus, NextDC, Boral, and Australian Shares Index ETF VAS. All right, so into PWR Holdings, this from Scott wanting to know about this. It is Peter Warren. For those of you in Sydney, it's Sutton Motors and the like, the largest car dealership there. Shares done considerably well, in fact. Also some movement just as far as stockholder notice there. SMA Motors has picked up about a 9% stake in the company. Mark, what are your thoughts on PWR?
I've got PWR Holdings, actually, instead of Peter Warren, but...
My mistake.
It is a common mistake, but... Peter Warren.
Yeah, I've got the wrong ticket code there.
But PWR is obviously their high-performance car parts are involved in Formula One.
Not unrelated. Cars.
not unrelated, absolutely. And look, this one, obviously, you know, it's very specialised, very niche, and a really good company. You know, if you have a look at the chart, the essentially it did get down to about, it's trading around about $9, it did get down to about $6. The reason for that volatility is it's got an extraordinarily sort of high PE, particularly compared, it's about 3x the industry mean, median. So, but price targets as well are around about that $10 mark. This one really, you know, it's not the company necessarily that, you know, that makes me not necessarily want to buy it. It's more so the market conditions. I mean, this is the sort of thing that if you're looking at the key stats like PE, you know, and things like that, it is quite expensive, and you know, and as we saw back in June, can fall very, very quickly. So I'd be preferring to buy this sort of on dips or waiting for another earnings season. This is probably the sort of thing that would be at $13 if we were, you know, in the market conditions we were at last year. So I'd probably rather be a little bit patient with this one. But overall, it is a very good company. It's just a little bit expensive at the moment. So I'd probably just say if you've got it, hold it. If you're looking to buy it, you know, be putting some cash aside and waiting for one of those horrible days that'll inevitably come about five more times over the rest of the year, and as we drift from optimism to pessimism back and forth. So I think you'll get better opportunities to buy this one.
All right. Gee, can you give us the bonus then on Peter Warren as well?
No, right. But I did have to double check.
Yeah, right. Fell for that one. It is a common mistake, obviously, because of the ticket code there. Okay, Andrew, what are your thoughts then on PWR Holdings?
Yeah, well, again, it's another Queensland company, so that's a big tick in the box immediately. But as Mark says, there's lots to like about this business. Being an F1 fan myself, I really do like this business. 90% of F1 companies use their products. So certainly that's a pretty ringing endorsement from that point of view. If I was to channel my inner Henry Jennings, which is feels a bit strange to be frank with you, I would probably nibble on this one. So in other words, just sort of have a little bit of a hold, but to Mark's point, if there was to be an oh bother moment and the wheels started falling off the market and you could pick it back up in that sort of $6-$7 dollar mark, that's where you'd probably sort of get stuck into it. But with a PE of 39 relative to forecast 19% earnings growth, it's a high growth business, but you're being asked to pay a high growth price. So just get a little bit, get yourself set, and then load up when it comes back off.
Okay. All right. That's PWR Holdings, which is ticker code PWH. All right, let's get into property. Nick wanting to know about Dexus, DX, the property management company and REIT. It's integrated its funds of APN Property into its platform. Andrew, interesting space, particularly at the moment, given what's going on more broadly at a macro level. So how are you looking at Dexus?
Yeah, and I'll talk a bit more about REITs tomorrow when I'm on the drop at 9:30, a bit of cross-selling opportunity there. But if you have a look at the performance of REITs over the last 12 months, they're down around 17%. So they certainly have been under pressure due to obviously, you know, rising interest rates, etc. But interestingly, we haven't seen unlisted property come off at anywhere near that rate of return. So, you know, one or two things is going on. Either the share market is treating REITs like an ATM, and because of its listed nature and sort of selling it too expensively, if I can put it that way. In other words, it's sold down too much, or listed property hasn't had that opportunity to be re-rated. So it's an interesting question. I think it's probably somewhere in the middle, to be frank with you. But if we're dealing with Dexus, interesting business. It's got exposure across industrial, office. It's around 95 to 98% occupancy, weighted average lease of around 4.7 years. You know, the CEO has been increasing their holding over the last 12 months, and the gearing isn't too bad because that's what brought a lot of these REITs undone back in 2007 through to 2009. The gearing's only about 27%. They've also got themselves involved in sort of funds management as well. They've gone and bought AMP Capital's Australian real estate and domestic infrastructure business. So lots to like about it, but those rising bond yields, albeit, you know, the RBA sort of mucked us around a little bit yesterday. I would just be cautious on this one for the time being until we see what that disconnect between listed versus unlisted property looks like. And dare I say it, maybe think about buying an ETF that potentially covers a whole range of them, including Dexus. So it's on.
Which would be what?
Well, you'd have to watch tomorrow at 9:30.
Right. In fact, that's 9:30 Queensland time. Probably more likely 10:30 our time, I think. All right, you've teased us there. Mark, what are your thoughts then on Dexus?
Yeah, look, the REIT sector overall has just been flogged, essentially. But just broadly, there's really, from what I can, you know, from where some of these things are trading, if you look at the characteristics of a lot of these REITs, it doesn't matter how good a quality you are. You've just been hit, you know, painted with the same brush. So I think there is pretty decent opportunities in this REIT sector at the moment. This one's trading at about a 35% discount to NTA. So, you know, unlisted property's got to come back a long, long way, to even get to where these prices are. These guys have got gearing around 27%, of which over 65% of it's hedged. So they've got no worries. And I would assume that'd be the lower band of the debt equity ratio as well. They picked up an infrastructure and an airport. They've diversified into more industrial, which I think is definitely our preferred space in the REIT sector. But they've got premium buildings as well. These guys didn't, this occupancy rate, even in the pandemic, they've got places like Chifley Tower, etc., didn't drop below 98%, you know, in the depths of the pandemic. So they've got very high quality properties. They have banked a couple. I think they sold a property in Eagle Street about a year ago. And all these valuations that have come through, you know, these guys are forced to do them. So, you know, I think the market has very much just thrown a few of these high quality REITs, out when and not really gone through the numbers with a fine enough tooth comb. This one with the office, particularly, I'd probably prefer something like CIP or Goodman Group in the industrial space, but they are increasing their industrial. So this would be something I'd probably look at, as we sort of start to call a peak in rates, because it could have a little bit more downside, because you can't fight the volume that's selling at the moment. But I think they're, high quality rates like this are at significant discounts,
so
particularly for a long term.
So perhaps look to pick it up once you feel as though those rates are
peaked. towards the end of the year. But if you want to pick up rates now, I think CIP or Goodman's are a better play because the outlook for industrial is stronger as it stands at the moment.
All right, but would you be holding it then?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, you're getting 6.5%, so unfranked, but you know.
Sorry, Andrew, just to clarify, that was a hold from you?
It's a hold.
Yeah. Okay. All right, let's move on to NextDC data centres. I guess you could argue this is also in property, really, given their investment there. It's off around 20% over the past year. Has bounced, obviously, in the last couple of days, along with pretty much everything else. But I guess we're looking at also that structural demand for cloud and co-location. So, Mark, what are your thoughts on NextDC?
It's a little bit unfortunate. This is kind of like a Transurban situation where they've got to spend all the money up front, and they'll see the benefits down the line. So from a short-term basis, it's probably not, for anyone who's looking for a quick return. But on a long-term basis, this would be the sort of thing that you'd probably, you'd nibble at consistently over a long period of time when you get the opportunities. I do worry about this. I think there's potential you may get this a little bit cheaper because it's a premium service. It is a REIT sort of dressed up as a tech company. There may be some more downside here over the next 6 months. But I think if you're sort of dollar averaging into this one, I think this has got, significantly good upside over a 5-year basis. So and beyond. So it's a definite hold. And then I think it's a buy dip situation. But I think that those cloud services, you can't really compete. The locations these guys have got, the services they've got, they've had supply chain issues. So I don't know whether you need to be in it right now, but it's certainly something just to keep on your watch list. And every time it seems to look ugly, you probably just pick up a little bit on a long-term basis, because it's a high quality company with great assets. And even though the power costs are going up, they've got a lot of solar across a lot of their data centers as well. So, that cost saving, that cost saving is quite good as well. So a hold for now, but buy on dips.
Andrew.
It's a bit of a REIT in SaaS clothing, Andrew. So again, all the things I just spoke about with REITs before. I'd have a somewhat different slant to Mark. I'd actually say a break above $10, because if you look at the chart, you'll see there's been, it's obviously gone through it given where the share price is at the moment. But prior to the recent excitement, if I can put it that way, it seemed to keep on bouncing off $10. So I think if you can get if it's got a bit of momentum, so in other words, you're giving away 5% at the moment, but if it's got that momentum and it's on the move, I like it too. I note the debt's gone up a bit. They've gone from about 7% gearing up to about 25% gearing. But it is being used productively. The average cost of the debt's only around 2.5%. The average tenure of the duration, rather, of the debt's about 5 years, so certainly not too worked up about that side. 92% of their revenue's recurring, so lots to like about it, but it's a hold and it's a buy above $10.
Okay. All right, look for that price, because what we're currently at, where are we? Not far behind, 9.47. Okay, moving on to Boral. Roger wanted to know about this, construction materials, and picked up by, in fact, the Stokes, part of their portfolio now. Andrew, once again, and also I guess you'd better factor in what's going on with the economy at the moment and how this is likely to play out for the company.
Yeah, so what a hot mess Boral turned out to be. Certainly another one of these cautionary tales of Australian companies going offshore and showing the world how they're going to do things. I'm all for aspiration. I want to be really clear about that. But unfortunately, the track record of Australian companies going offshore and showing people how good we are, and we can all think of examples, CSL, but for every CSL, we are immediately reminded of NAB, Lendlease, and plenty of others that have not, and unfortunately, Boral's in that pantheon of pain as well. They, as you said, the Stokes family, though, have timed their entry perfectly. They own around 69% of this company now, refocused back in on Australia. And obviously, Boral have been impacted by floods, COVID lockdowns, energy pricing, supply chain, you name it, they've absolutely copped it. But they've also got good exposure to some of these major infrastructure projects on the go at the moment, Westgate Tunnel, Sydney Hydro, Western Sydney Airport. They just won the Sydney Metro West contract. They've got a new CEO, the ex-CEO of Cleanaway, Vic Bansal. And so there's lots to like about it. I guess where I struggle a little bit, Andrew, is that it's a PE of 25 relative to forecast earnings growth of 13% with all the headwinds we just spoke about. And its consensus is $3 relative to a share price of 276. So in other words, there's a lot of good news baked in, or expectation is baked in. And again, dare I mention margin of safety, you don't have a great margin of safety there. So I think it's a hold, but it's hard to bet against the Stokes family. Just have a look at how Seven Group have performed as a business. And Ryan Stokes is now the chair of this business, drawing a salary, I think, about $16,000 a year. So they certainly committed to put their money where their mouth is. But again, probably one you could buy on a worse day. It's a hold.
Okay, Mark.
Yeah, I again agree thoroughly with Andrew. Realistically, it... Now, with the new management coming in, a lot of it's, you know, you can look at the chart of this and basically almost ignore it, because it's a very different business to what it used to be. And now they've got some, you know, high quality investors coming in there. I'd be waiting to see. I certainly wouldn't be buying it here. I think you'll probably get it cheaper. As with the REIT sector, you know, the building sector will but just on suspicion, probably get hammered at stages over the next 6 months. Particularly if those economic numbers start to peel back, you know, in the US. Very high debt to equity ratio. It's got a high PE. To be honest, I don't think I'd be taking the risk. I think I'd probably be, you know, be selling and sitting and watching and waiting on this one. I think you probably don't really, there's no real margin of safety, I think, for at least 6 months on this thing. We obviously had James Hardy at the start of the show, and you know, it did go to the US, and now, you know, obviously has done very well over there. I think that shows that management's probably higher quality. I don't like the fact that they, when they sold the US business, they just paid out shareholders and didn't invest in their own business. I think that shows a lack of confidence from management as well. So yeah, for me, I wouldn't be holding this one, because I think, you know, the risk reward, whether, you know, they're pricing in a nice little premium there, they may well be right, but, you know, why? I don't think at this stage you need to be taking the risk when you've got obviously a far better option, say, in a pretty, in, you know, that's been able to do something this company hasn't, in James Hardy, that's at fairly cheap prices as well. So, you know, to steal Andrew's focus, I mean, something like IFRA is also trading at a very low price at the moment. It's been hammered over the last sort of couple of weeks. If you wanted a diversified exposure, we were having a look at that the other day as well, given it's fallen off a cliff, but sort of trading around about $19 or $20. So, and those infrastructure projects are only flowing through, you know, from this. This is the thing we've got to realise in perspective. It's only been a couple of years since we've had pandemic, the world's ending, into stimulus, back at record highs, into bear market. I mean, a lot of things have happened very quickly, and there's a lot of noise out there. You know, diversify, like that infrastructure spending, which was billions or trillions, with, you know, it doesn't feed out immediately. I think there was some infrastructure projects that were really only approved by Biden at the start of this year. So that's a good exposure, but yep. I'd be selling this. It's too expensive at the moment. And if the Stokes family and the new CEO from Cleanaway, who did a good job there, you know, come through with the goods, we'll buy it on the way back up. But I don't see any reason to hold it at the moment.
Yeah, Cleanaway, clean it up is what you're saying. All right, okay. Let's round it out with an ETF. This is the Australian Shares Index, ETF VAS. From Vanguard, Sam wanting to know about this. Andrew, we're going to start with you for obvious reasons. So what, it's looking to track the ASX 300. No surprise then that it has matched that in terms of having gone backwards this year.
Should have gone to Mark. He's pulled the IFRA out of left field, you know? I mean, I
thought you'd like that one.
Yeah, well, just very briefly on that, we've looked at IFRA, and we also don't mind VBILD, VBLD from Vanguard. That's not too bad either, because it's got exposure to railways and electricity transmission. So that might be one for the shopping list as well. Anyway, to the question of hand, VAS, and as Andrew A1 has just pointed out, it focuses on the 300, whereas, of course, the main game here in Australia, the ASX S&P 200. So VAS covers companies 201 to 300. And that has driven a touch more outperformance relative to the 200. And by a touch, I'm talking 8 basis points. So over the last 5 years, the there's a couple of other competitors, STW, IOZ, and A200. And we'll talk about those in a second. But STW is the oldest and, you know, the biggest proxy. It's driven 8.13%, whereas VAS, which has driven 8.21%. So certainly having exposure to the companies 201 to 300 has been helpful. But really, at the end of the day, when we're in this space, it does come down in part to cost. And A200 from BetaShares is running at 7 basis points, albeit it's not tracking this particular index. It's tracking another index, which is very similar to the ASX 300. You got IOZ at 9 basis points, which is tracking the ASX S&P 200, and then State Street at 13 basis points, which is again tracking that ASX S&P 200. So to me, if you're looking to sort of, am I trying to work out, is James Hardie better than Boral, better than BHP, and you're just going, this is all too hard, why wouldn't you just buy VAS and have that at one end of your Australian share portfolio exposure, and then at the other end, you know, the barbell approach, you might either choose 3 or 4 direct equities, or you might choose a different type of ETF. So, Andrew, it's a buy all day, every day, because you can't beat the market.
You can't beat the market. Or can you, Mark?
Consistent.
I hope so, otherwise I wouldn't have a job. But, no, I do like this one. I'm just going to talk in terms of an index perspective, because I think Andrew's obviously, bowed to my learned colleague there. He's all over it. So I didn't really prepare too much in terms of the fees, etc. But I think the Australian market overall, look, if you're pricing us in US dollar terms, we're down like 26% this year. We've got, you know, relatively low PEs. We've got high dividend yields. Our biggest trading partner is more likely to recover this year than, you know, than it's already, you know, at low levels. So, you know, commodities do quite well in inflationary markets. I think our really high quality commodity companies are less cyclical than they used to be. So I think the Australian market will probably be the standout, I think, this year overall in comparison. Look, the US is obviously going to bounce harder, but, you know, you've got to look at the fact that the US is still 40% above pre-pandemic highs, whereas we're 10% below it. So we don't tend to fall into deep recessions. I think we hold the world record for the longest consecutive economic growth of any first world country. So at some stage, international investors will wake up to this, because our market, in comparison to many of the other indexes, is very cheap and very reliable. And a lot of the businesses make money. It's not, you know, not silly things like revenue multiples. So, and I think the, you know, a lot of it plays into, you know, the decarbonisation as well, as to BHP's point of steel production, etc. So, and our banking sector is very stable. So I think absolutely the Australian market is a very good buy, particularly on a relative value basis. Mm. So, look, if anything, you know, we've been buyers of Gear, which is the leveraged version, BetaShares leveraged version of this, over the last sort of week and a half to 2 weeks, just sort of scaling in on various days. So, I think we'll likely be in a range from around about these lows to the underside of the 200-day moving average for the index, but more than likely for the rest of the year. But I think Australia probably comes out on top on a 12-month basis.
All right, so it's a buy from you.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yep, okay, good one. Let's summarise then. The second half of the show began with a PWR Holdings there. It is a hold from Mark. Andrew, looking at as a nibble as we go. Dexus, the REIT there, a hold from Andrew. Mark, also a hold, although he probably prefers playing in the industrial space there for the REITs like Goodman, CIP. NextDC. Andrew refers to this as a REIT in SaaS clothing. He's got a hold on it, as does Mark. He sort of sees a long-term nibble for NextDC. Boral, a hold from Andrew. Mark has got a sell on it. He thinks it's just too expensive at these levels. And finally there, the VAS ETF. A buy from Andrew, saying you can't beat the market. It does encompass those, the ASX 300 there. And likewise from Mark, it is a buy, saying the Australian market looks comparatively cheap with its global peers. That is the show for today, and we thank our guests. Andrew, thanks for joining us from DP Wealth Advisory, as always, and we'll see you tomorrow, of course.
It's 9:30, 10:30, 8:30, depending upon where in Australia you are. Looking
forward to seeing. Now you confused us. And Mark, thanks for joining us in Macro.
Cheers, no worries.
All right, stay with us, because coming up in the small caps, AI Media CEO talks us through its recent five-year deal with Seven West Media. Thanks for watching.
The Call is brought to you by CMC Markets, a world-leading online trading platform for CFDs and shares around the globe.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.